Welcome back to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone, and today we are exploring the fiddle family. We have discussed the various ways that bowed string instruments produce sound, and we are introducing each orchestral member of the fiddle family, or the bowed string family. We already discussed the violin. Now let's talk about the violin's slightly larger sibling, the viola. You probably already know the basic physical law regarding instruments, that the bigger the body of an instrument, or the longer the string, the lower the sound it makes, the lower the pitch it produces. So the viola is slightly lower than the violin. This gives it an expressive, richer, and perhaps more melancholy color than its smaller sibling. The best example I can play of a viola, I believe, is a concerto-type piece that features both the violin and viola. This way you can hear the contrast between the two similar-sounding instruments, because these two soloists take turns throughout the piece, and you can tell which one is the violin and which one is the viola based on the higher pitches and the lower pitches. This piece is actually what you hear as the introduction and closing music for this particular radio program. It's Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat. It's more like what we'd call now a double concerto for violin, viola, and orchestra. This is the first of the three movements, and I want to play it all in its entirety. Listen, after the orchestral introduction, for the two soloists taking turns, or playing in harmony, or playing the same pitches an octave apart. This will help you distinguish between the higher-sounding violin and the lower-sounding viola. This is Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat, the first movement. The soloists are violinist Yitzhak Perlman, violist Pinchas Zukerman, and the orchestra is the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra with Zubin Mehta conducting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that is Music for Life. You are listening to Music for Life. Today we are talking about the fiddle family, the instruments that comprise the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, the string section. We are talking about each instrument from this bowed string family. That was an example of a violin and viola playing solo against a full orchestra. That was Itzhak Perlman, Pinchas Zukerman, and Zubin Mehta and the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra performing the first movement of Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat. Now we will move on to the next instrument in the bowed string family. Are you sitting down? Because this instrumentalist always is. The cello is even bigger than the viola, so that the player has to sit, holding it upright between the knees. Its proper name is the violoncello, and it is deep, rich, and soulful. Some say it is the instrument that most closely approximates the timbre of the human voice. Because of its size, you can imagine that it is much lower than the violin, obviously, though the player can make its highest string so short that it goes quite high in terms of pitch. Before I play an example of a singular cello sound, and we already heard something like this earlier in our episode, there is a beautiful moment of an entire section of celli in the opening to the third movement of Brahms' Symphony No. 3. Listen to this cello section. That was James Levine and the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra in just the opening section of Brahms' Symphony No. 3, the third movement, which features an entire cello section on the melody up in the higher register of the instrument, giving it a certain intensity. Now let's hear a singular cello instead of a cello section. I'm going to play an example where one cello plays along with a violin and piano. This instrumentation is often referred to as a piano trio, referring to three instruments, one of which is a piano, not three pianos. So in the piano trio, there's a violin, cello, and piano. And it's good to have this contrast so you can distinguish between the lower cello and the higher violin. In this particular piece, also by Johannes Brahms, you can distinctly hear the slight differences in colors. It's mainly just that one stringed instrument plays low notes while the other plays high notes. This is the fourth and final movement of Brahms's piano trio in B. The cello begins with the main theme, then the violin states the theme, and then they play together on and off throughout the piece. Listen for the interplay of these two string instruments throughout this final movement of Brahms' piano trio in B, performed by the Eroica Trio. Thank you. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today we are talking about the fiddle family, the instruments that comprise the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, the string section. We are talking about each instrument from this bowed string family, and that was an example of a singular cello playing along with the singular violin and piano. That was the finale, or the final movement, to Brahms' Piano Trio in B, performed by the Eroica Trio. Next, we come to the double bass. This is an elephant of an instrument, and is played standing up. This bass fiddle gets the name double bass because it sounds one octave lower than the cello, and its part is often, particularly in classical era music, a doubling of the cello line, or a mimicking of the cello line, but sounding one octave below. So it's a doubling bass, or a double bass. With its lush, deep tone, it can sound ponderous. But then there is Edgar Meyer, a composer and double bassist who makes it sound downright nimble. I'll play you an example of Edgar Meyer toward the end of the program. That's our dessert today. But first, let's listen to a more traditional example from the standard repertoire. This is from Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, where he depicts different animals by different instruments. Probably the most famous animal and the most famous section of this chamber piece is the swan, performed by the cello. But here is an example of the bass. The bass is performing the animal, the elephant. That's partly why I said this is an elephant of an instrument. And Saint-Saëns uses the double bass to represent the elephant in the Carnival of the Animals, performed here by members of the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. That was The Elephant from Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals. That features a double bass. This is Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. Today's show is titled The Fiddle Family, and in this episode we have been exploring the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, the string section. We have discussed the variety of sounds these instruments can produce, and we have also been discussing each instrument of this family and some of the great repertoire composed for these instruments. Before we get into our segment, Backstage Banter, I want to put all these instruments back together. You'll hear the homogeneity of sound. That is, the colors are all so similar. It's hard to know where, say, the violin ends and the viola begins, or where the viola ends and the cello begins. There are subtle differences, but all these instruments, aside from their range, have such similar tone colors, and this makes for a beautiful blend in pieces written just for string orchestra. Here's a piece originally composed as a string quartet by the American composer Samuel Barber. It was the second movement, or the slow movement, of the string quartet he composed in 1936, but he decided to arrange it for string orchestra 2 years later. It was made popular, you could say, by President John F. Kennedy's funeral, then later by the Platoon soundtrack, and then by several other films and television shows. I love this quote about the piece from Stephen Schwartz, a famous Broadway composer. He said, "Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings amply demonstrates two principles. Some of the greatest ideas are essentially quite simple, and not everything popular is junk." The simple idea is that this whole piece is built around an ascending three-note motive. That idea, those three notes, are transferred higher and higher throughout the piece until it climaxes at an extremely high energy moment. All the strings are in their highest registers. Schwartz said, "Sequence is the most elementary form of variation, and most composers learn to use it sparingly. Barber builds an entire piece from it. Sequence is the idea of taking a musical motive or idea and repeating it either higher or lower. So Barber takes this three-note motive and does sequence after sequence after sequence. Here it is, Barber's Adagio for Strings, performed by the Smithsonian Chamber Players, Kenneth Slovic conducting." Thank you. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone, and that was Kenneth Slovic conducting the Smithsonian Chamber Players in Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. We are talking about the centerpiece of the Standard Orchestra, the string section. We heard an entire string orchestra perform just there, and we have discussed the various instruments of the string families. Those instruments, as we know them today, have been in this form for the past few hundred years or so. The standard for this craftsmanship was set by a man named Antonio Stradivari. Stradivari was an Italian luthier. A luthier is someone who makes and works on stringed instruments, not just bowed instruments, but all stringed instruments. I sat down with Lou Lynch, president of the Tulsa Violin Shop. He specializes in what's called setting up new stringed instruments. My discussion with Lou is the content for our Backstage Banter segment, where we interview performers on the concert circuit today for their perspectives on music. Lou is also a cellist involved in two local chamber ensembles.
I started as a professional symphony player, and then I used to have a lot of students, and sometimes, and this happened here in Tulsa, the kids would bring instruments in. They were sometimes just out of a local repair shop, and I'd always liked hanging around violin shops, so I just started doing it. And then I hooked up with my friend Amos Hargrave. I was in Aspen, he was down the valley in Basalt, and so I had really some good mentors, and just like evolved.
Can you just like very basically describe what setting up an instrument
right.
is?
Right, that's the post, the position of the post, the fit of the post. In French, the sound post, the word that is used is lem, which means the soul. And it really is. I mean, I think that's a great description of it. But there are other variables too. I mean, the position of the neck, the board itself wears over time, so all these things come into playability, experimenting with different types of strings. And as a player, I think that's a little bit of the advantage that I have, my background as a player. To me, like I said, my strengths are in setting instruments up, and part of that as a player, realizing that there has to be a dialogue. It's not just the bench person dictating what he thinks it should be, because you've got to be flexible and sort of shape the sound based on what the player is looking for. Everybody has a different voice. So, I mean, there's not one standard perfect sound that you want a particular instrument to have. It also has to match the player. And therefore, you know, then you have to have a lot of flexibility with that. There are times when I can, you know, a person may not have had the instrument set up very well, and I can come in and basically do what I think is correct based on measurements and sort of thing. And it can dramatically change the sound of the instrument. And many times people are, well, this is it, you know. And sometimes people say, yeah, I like this. Can we do a little bit more here, a little bit more there? And that's where, you know, that dialogue comes into play and trying to manipulate the sound.
How does the wood, you know, how do the materials affect the sound of the instrument? What are the differences?
You can't make a really, really fine instrument without good materials, good quality wood. So that's not that difficult to acquire. Wood that's been seasoned properly, wood that has the proper grain. I mean, you select different woods from a violin than you do for a viola or a cello. But, you know, you want a top that is strong, has enough spring to it. Yeah, you've got to have good materials. And then you have to have a good model. And an experienced maker is able to execute, you know, the dimensions, thicknesses, and that sort of thing. And also, the wood tells you some of that. In other words, a good maker is not going to just take every piece of wood and do it exactly the same. Because, you know, you'll tap, you'll tune the plates by tapping, that sort of thing. You know, how stiff it is, that sort of thing. So, you know, you gauge all of that by what the wood tells you to do.
How do you make an instrument sound better?
Somewhat complicated, but a good question, because if an instrument is brought in and I know that it's a good instrument, I mean, just having a fresh set of strings can make a big difference. This is an older instrument that was brought in. Nice fiddle.
So you're showing me a violin there without any strings.
Right, and this one was probably made, you know, around 1920. And it has good graduations, thicknesses and everything. It's good, it's a good model. But when I took when I look at it, you know, this has been sitting, not being played for many, many years. And I look inside and I see the sound post is kind of leading like that. Very, very common that someone that this, an instrument that's been sitting and hasn't been played, the tension is now off. But even with the tension over years, over time, the back, in this case being maple, will stretch out a little bit. And maple, when it stretches over time, will start to hold that stretch. The top spruce will spring back. So with that stretching, with the tension, everything, then that post becomes a little bit short over time. So it usually needs either a taller post or to be adjusted to pull out to give the tension necessary to have a focused sound. If there's not enough tension on the instrument, then the sound tends to be spread out and not focused. One of the great setup people, Rene Morel, who was with Jacques Francais for many years in New York. I remember he was at one of the ASA conferences and he was talking about sound. He says, sound is like a snowball. And if you pack it really well and you throw it, it's going to carry. It's going to have focus and direction. But if you don't, it's diffused. Well, that's a really good analogy to sound. It may sound big under the ear to someone that's not aware of the kind of sound that will project in a hall, for instance. And many instruments that a player will pick up that make me I've had instruments here that are really, really good instruments that most people are not even aware of because it'll sound really tiny under the ear. But that focused, small sound will carry.
And your job is to get that to come out of the instrument?
Right, right. If it's there. I will sometimes regraduate, put a bar in, that sort of thing, and that can change the whole sound of an instrument. Because if it's too heavy, it's not going to vibrate. If the bridge is a little bit heavy and you're looking for a little darker sound, you can sometimes remove some of that wood in certain places and change that sound.
Wow.
Changing one string sometimes can change the sound of an instrument. Because it's all a balance.
When the horsehair hits the string, what does the quality of the bow affect the sound of the instrument?
Well, a tremendous amount. Usually, you will match the bow up to the violin. In other words, they have to be compatible. You can play a bow on a certain violin and play it on another violin, and it may have a totally different sound. So you want to enhance what's inside that instrument. There's a sympathetic vibration. There's the way that the bow feels to the player, and that can influence the sound as well. So there are many variables. Really good, high-quality hair is really important. And
what makes high-quality hair?
The hair has to be strong, but you know, if you pull it a little bit, it's going to come back. The best hair that I've found is Siberian and very cold climates. The horses, it's very short horse, but usually very long hair. Stallion hair, it has been the best. And over the years, I found a supplier that I really, really like the hair, best I've ever had before, and it's expensive. I mean, the new bundle that I got in is like $565 for a bundle, but it's worth it.
Yeah, the question that I've been asked, you know, well, why is that instrument more expensive than that instrument? What makes an instrument? You appraise a lot of instruments.
I get that question all the time.
What makes an instrument appraise at such a high value?
Like you said, looking at the instruments, to the layperson, they look indistinguishable. So it's attention to detail, and like I said, starting with you know, good quality wood. When one person is making an instrument, they have complete control. They have the sensitivity to the wood, like I was talking earlier. You know, what does this particular wood need to match up with the back, the top and the back, that sort of thing. So if you, as an individual, you have time to be aware of all those things, then you can make the allowances for that particular piece of wood to make it into a nice instrument. It's not anything mystical. I mean, you know, Stradivari, these guys, you know, they were well-trained. They were creative and inventive and experimented and, you know, developed really good models that we copy today.
So you're seeing the difference between, you know, like the factory job or partially factory made with mm-hmm. someone who has complete control over the entire process. And that's what you're seeing as like higher value.
Oh, exactly. Right.
Well, thanks very much for talking with
sure.
me. I
yeah,
appreciate
yeah.
that. That was my interview with Lou Lynch of the Tulsa Violin Shop. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. You can follow this show on Twitter at MusicForLifePCG. Today we've been talking about the instruments of the string section, the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, these bowed string instruments, or the fiddle family. We've talked about all the different ways sound can be produced on these instruments, and we've introduced each instrument to you, a violin, viola, cello, and bass, and given examples from the standard repertoire of great pieces written for these solo instruments or the groupings of these instruments. Now, as promised, we're going to conclude the show with a piece by Edgar Meyer. This will serve as our dessert segment today, where we hear an example from the popular or folk tradition or lighter classical fare to end the program. Edgar Meyer's compositions fuse classical and bluegrass. Another living composer who does that is the violinist Mark O'Connor, who we talked about a little earlier. Some have called this style of music, this fusion of classical and bluegrass, bluegrassical. Edgar Meyer is also a double bassist. So here is a piece he wrote featuring himself as the bass soloist, where the soloist plucks, or plays pizzicato, I guess you could say, the entire time. Enjoy this piece titled The Low Road. You have been listening to Music for Life. From the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.